Hello, Bill Belichick.
Hey, Glenn. Pete. Coach. Freddie.
Any sleep last night, Coach? Did you sleep at all last night?
Not too much.
Well, you've had an opportunity to look now at the film on Certain Today. A lot of good things last night coming out of that game, but once again, a few mistakes that were really costly.
Well, we had our opportunities, and you know, we made quite a few plays. They just made a couple more than we did, so yeah, it's disappointing to lose that game.
On the on the Copen snap, was this just a miscommunication because Cass wasn't looking? It was supposed to be silent. Was that a silent snap?
No. We're at home. We did it verbally. We just didn't.
Because it didn't look like you said anything.
Obviously, get it.
Yeah.
Right. So.
We've had a lot of calls today talking about why didn't Bill go for the two-point conversion at the end of regulation. We talked a lot about it, so I'll throw it to you. Did you ever even think of going for the two-point conversion? We know that Shanahan did it earlier this year.
Yeah.
Somebody else did it that failed. But
We talked about it. Well, there's a couple issues. One was we had used our best two-point play earlier. And so then the options were either to run the same play again, which I don't know if that's really what you want to do, or run another play that, based on the way the Jets were playing in the red area, we didn't feel as good about that play. So, like, yeah, we could have done it, but, you know, you want to run a good play. You want to feel real good about the play, and we felt good about the two-point play that we hit. You know, you want to come back and run that same play again. I don't know.
So. Was it all the play, or do you take into consideration at all momentum on your side? You've stunned them now with this unbelievable drive, and even if you don't win the flip of the coin, you really have momentum and your offense geared and moving in the overtime. Any of that come into consideration?
Well, yeah, I mean, I felt good about the overtime. I felt like if we got the ball, we'd be able to move it. And I felt like defensively that we'd stopped them in the third quarter. They had the good drive there in the fourth quarter. It was aided by a penalty, but it's still, I felt like we'd gotten a couple things straightened out in that drive that they hurt us with, and that we would get those things corrected and that we would be able to stop them again. And we, you know, had our chances in overtime to stop them, but we didn't. They converted a couple third downs and ultimately kicked the field goal. So, you know, I was okay, you know, with that. I really felt like, regardless of what happened, other than them returning the kickoff, that I felt like we'd be in pretty good shape on offense or defense. Of course, didn't turn out that way, but that was our thinking.
You're third and 15. You had a three-man rush, eight guys dropping the zone. One guy's went open. So it must have been a miscommunication somewhere on coverage.
We had two players in the same zone.
Yeah, because you're not going to have a guy wide open like that.
No. So we end up with two guys in the same zone, and Keller went straight up the field. I mean, we didn't even run a route. He just kind of ran straight ahead, and we were just not in that zone. So
we saw the most of the offensive adjustments in the second half were fairly obvious. What were some of your defensive adjustments? It seemed very effective in the second half.
You know, we really didn't do a whole lot differently, Steve. We just, in the third quarter, we ran a lot of the same things we ran in the first half. I think we just played them a little better, and they maybe matched up a little bit better against what the Jets had called. And of course, we had seen their offense, and so I think maybe we reacted to them a little bit quicker, hopefully.
Now, offensively, you talk about changes. You went no huddle, right?
And yeah, really.
Big guys on the field, and were able to exploit those defensive backs.
Right. Well, on the last drive at the end of the first half, when we went down and scored, and Gaffney caught the touchdown pass. Actually, the series before that, we had some spread out plays, two four wide receivers, where Aiken caught the slip screen and so forth. So we just felt like at halftime that was the best way to attack the Jets. We were only down by 11, so it was a two-score game with 30 minutes to go. I mean, that wasn't, I didn't feel like we were forced to be in a two-minute mode, but we felt like that would be the best way to go. And then we had, the three drives in the third quarter, all of which were productive, but then they all didn't materialize because of, one was a turnover on the fumble, then another one was on the snap, and then the other one was we dropped the pass on third down on a second and 10, and then we got a third and one and then missed the play on third down. So we felt like we were moving the ball good. We just weren't able to keep those drives going all the way. And so that was... But it was a couple missed opportunities in the third
Jenkins,
quarter.
Even Jenkins, who's a beast, and when you were running that no huddle, he was out of gas. He was just standing straight up and not moving. The pressure wasn't coming, and Castle had a lot of time to survey the field.
Well, I thought the pass protection really was good considering the number of times that we threw, and it was obvious we were throwing. They just shuffled those linemen in and out. They used all of them, you know, DeVito and Pahua and all those guys. So they were rotating them in there, but I thought the pass blocking was good, and we were trying to get all five receivers out. Kevin was out in the pattern. Watson was out in the pattern, so we weren't keeping a lot of guys in for extra help and protection, like, for example, we did against Indianapolis. So I thought the line really held up, and several times those inside guys, Steve and Dan and Logan, were able to push the pocket wide enough where Castle could step up and, you know, run for some easy yardage. So that was... You know, that was good, too.
I was going to say, what Gerard Mayo did last night was about as dominating a performance by one individual as I've seen in quite some time. But to be so young and to be so... looked like a seasoned veteran out there, like he's been playing for 10 years. I mean, that was an incredible performance last night. He seemed to be on every single play.
Well, he's a very instinctive player. PD kind of always seems to know where the ball is, even if it's on plays that he hadn't seen before. If it's a new play or some kind of gadget play or something, he really seems to be able to sort things out. And he's very fast and athletic, and you know, he gets over the trash in the line of scrimmage well. The bodies and you know, arms and legs and stuff like that are on the ground that linebackers have to get through, and he's very fast and explosive to the perimeter, and he's a good tackler. So when he gets a shot at him, he normally gets him down.
Scrambled by Brett Favre is the one that comes to mind. He's on the outside of the field. He comes running over, and he instinctively figures out what Brett Favre is going to do, and then goes right at him, and that was it. That was an unbelievable play.
He's a very, very rangy player, and a good tackler.
Now, he threw a lot to Benjamin Watson and Gaffney. They were rolling coverage over to Moss to keep him.
Moss and Welker, yeah. Yeah, they did a lot of where they doubled both those receivers, and that gave Kevin and Ben and Jabbar some good opportunities in single coverage and with some combination patterns on them that we're well run and well thrown by Castle, and it really, you know, gave us a chance to you know, to hit some good chunks of yardage, and those guys did a good job.
So you kept Castle, Wes Welker and Rand in the same side. It really opened up that one side of the field.
Yeah, they basically pushed it over to them, and then singled out the backside.
Did they change up with Ty Law on Gaffney from Moss, or was he just playing that side?
You know, they did it about two or three different ways. Glenn, he started out the game with Revis in the slot on Welker, and Law went to Moss, and Rhodes went to Moss. And so Rhodes and Law played Moss in a high-low, you know, coverage a lot. But then as the game went on, I think they switched that some. They just went to left and right. And then at the end of the game, really Ty wasn't in there a lot, but then he came back in on that last drive. You know, they shuffled them around. I'm not sure what exactly all the reasons were, but to be honest with you, it didn't really affect us too much. Which corner was on who, what affected us was kind of where the over-the-top help was from the safeties.
Well, Randy did a great job in that touchdown because he basically gave him an old post-up.
He's getting wrestled. It was a wrestling
match. And Ty had to grab him because he was much smaller. And then he just released, and it was perfect.
Yeah, Randy, I'll tell you, I know Matt had a great night, you know, throwing for 400 yards and running for 60 or whatever it was, but, you know, to me, Moss probably was really probably the most dominant player in the game.
Really?
For us. Just, well, because he took so much coverage with him, and then in the critical play of the game, you know, made a play that I don't know how many other receivers in the league make that play.
Yeah.
And, you know, for a guy to be doubled as much as Randy was in that game and still working as hard as he did to get open and at the same time you know, continue to force them to double him and then create those opportunities for everybody else. But then when it came down to, you know, he got single coverage out there and he ran past Carroll and Matt just overthrew him. But that was his, you know, one chance really to get down the field. And he had him beat by 5 yards. And then on the last play of the game, the, you know, his ability to get open and then make that catch, I mean, you know, his, well, the stats really don't indicate just how I thought impressive Randy's performance was last night.
You know, it's interesting you mention that because I think people are critical when a guy does not make a lot of catches in the game, sitting there saying, well, what the hell did he do in the game? But did they, were they forced to change up during the course of the game once you started exploiting them because of their overplay on Randy Moss?
Well, yeah, I mean, we threw for 400 yards,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. Is he getting...
Most of that was away from Randy, really. Most of that was away from him.
So what they're doing wasn't working. Did they ever...
Did they ever change up on what they were doing with Moss? They stayed with Moss, fearing him then.
Yeah, well, the last series of the game, they played a prevent coverage where they had the corners on the sideline. It was a zone coverage and not let the ball get out of bounds. And
gave you the middle.
Right, gave the middle. So we completed it and clocked it and all that. But up until that point, yes, the game was a coverage over the top of Moss 90% of the time, and like I said, the one time when they didn't do it, you know, he was 5 yards behind.
Is it easy?
I would say, if, you know, to me, Randy in that game when he had a chance, he made it. And the times where they doubled him and they pushed the coverage over to him, he worked hard and made the coverage struggle to get him, which kept it over there, and that opened up, you know, a lot for everybody else. Aiken, that was the slip screen to Aiken came on the backside of Moss and Welker being together. You know, that was another, 50 yards or whatever it was. So those are the kind of plays that, you know, Randy will never get credit for in the stats, but I think without him in the game, you know, a lot of those would have been a lot harder to get.
It's got to be frustrating for him, though, drawing all that coverage almost every game.
Well, I'm sure it probably is, Steve, but I would just say that, you know, I think last night's game, to me, is why he's a captain on this football team.
Yep.
That the players respect him, and he went out and did all he could do, which a lot of that was to help the team out in other ways, even though it wasn't production in his column, but it was team production that he had a lot to
blocking
do with.
Too. He blocked them, you know, a bunch of
players. Oh yeah, he had a couple good plays. He had a nice block on the slip screen.
You would figure after like 350 yards, I might have said, you know what, let's change this up a little bit. Like, but what do you get? Then you get a big play for 40 yards instead of those short 10s and 15s like you were doing all along. So it is, let Randy run through the defense or take your chances on the short pass to guys that aren't as capable as Welker and Randy Moss.
Yeah, well, I think the pass that Matt overthrew Randy on down the sideline when he got behind Carroll, probably, you know, if they were thinking about, well, we don't need to roll to him every time, I think that was after that play that kind of sent him back there to, it was a great read by Matt. I mean, it was unfortunate we just
did he trip up a little bit as he was, it looked like he tripped up, the guy tripped his legs up, so he stumbled a little bit. If he was running full speed, he might have got it.
Yeah, as he was going by Carroll, they kind of bumped a little bit, but then once he got behind him, it was, like I said, he had him by 5 yards. So,
what was the ripple effect of not having Ty Warren in there in terms of your defensive line rotation?
Well, we would love to have Ty, but I thought Mike Wright stepped in at left end and did a good job. Mike's a good, strong, physical player, and he's got good quickness and explosion in the pass rush. And, you know, I thought he gave us a lot of quality plays over there. I mean, and we'd love to have Ty, don't get me wrong, but I think Mike really, he did a nice job.
But with the rotation, then, you know, Ty comes in, then Wright comes in, can sub for everyone else.
Yes.
They're out there a little bit longer, kind of wears on.
Mike Wright played, more than what he has without Ty in there as part of the rotation. So, you're right, that's what I mean. But it would have been great to have had Ty and be able to spell our defenders a little bit more on the front, but... No, Jarvis and Jarvis came in there and gave us some quality snaps too for Richard and so.
What happened in the coverage on the Leon Washington run back? Just guys get clustered up and.
Well, we. I think we did what we wanted to do in terms of, you know, the run, the contain, and force. Just really the leverage broke down on the play. We had, you know, a couple guys that should have really had the ball on their inside shoulder. We're a little too far inside, and Washington slipped outside of them. Our safety kind of got caught up in the wash on a, you know, with the blockers and all in front of them. And you know, once Washington hit that and split it to the outside, and the safety wasn't, you know, the safety kind of got trapped in the traffic, then, you know, we couldn't get up from the backside.
Yeah. I'm always amazed so many times during the season. We started again Monday night in the San Fran Arizona game, how the clock management at the end and how guys cannot line up properly just to spike the ball properly. But you guys seem to do it flawlessly almost every single time. It happened again last night, that final minute.
Was that as good as you've seen?
How often do you get? Is that something you really drill into the players' heads during, you know, practice? At certain times during the week, or because it amazes me at this level how many times teams can't get it right. I don't understand it, and you guys always seem to get it right.
Well, I'd say at least once a week when we do the 2-minute drill, Pete. One part of that is the clock play, and so you kind of never know exactly what formation you're going to be in or where the ball's going to be completed to the back or tight end or receiver or on a crossing route or, you know, whatever it is. And so you can never really plan for that. You've just got to, okay, he's caught it, he's tackled, we go up to the line and clock, and you have certain rules about, you know, where to line up and the formation and so forth. And so we work on it every week, and that certainly, you know, has helped us last night.
You were really hated by the fact that virtually every one of those passes gave you a first down, so that by, you know, spiking the ball, it's not hurting
second
you.
Down.
Yeah, you second down. You know, you're
right.
Perfect position every time.
Right.
On the fourth and one, last play of the game, what was the initial call? Because he came out of the pocket, he was pressured, and he rolled out to his... Was Randy the initial guy?
It was all four receivers going vertical, and we figured that somewhere along the line there would be a one-on-one, that, you know, they wouldn't double every single guy, and Kevin was coming out too, so wherever the lightest coverage was, that's, you know, we try to go to the one-on-one there and, you know, hope the guy could, you know, the receiver could make mm-hmm. the play on the, you know, away from wherever his coverage was, inside or outside or high or low, whatever it was. And then there was a little bit of pressure from Ellis, and Matt stepped up in the pocket and scrambled, which we always work on that as part of our red area drill. Like, we go fourth and goal on the 5, fourth and goal on the 10, fourth and goal on the 15. There, if there's not a player open that the quarterback has a good one-on-one look to, then he'll scramble, and then that gives the receivers a chance to uncover. And that was you know, a little bit of part of the play there where Randy ended up, you know, coming back or kind of boxing Law out there on the sideline. And then
Law had a good half Nelson on him, though. Yeah. All wrestling.
And then Castle put the ball right, you know, in perfect position where Randy could make the play.
Tremendous. When you punted in the fourth quarter, how much time was left on the clock?
It was about 2:30. We had one timeout left.
Yep.
There was... Had we not got sacked, we probably would have gone for it on fourth down. You know, if it had been fourth and 8 or fourth and 10, we had fourth and 17. With 2:30 to go, we had one timeout, so we knew we'd get our timeout, then the 2-minute warning, and then they would run the play on third down, which we kind of felt like it would have to be a running mm-hmm. play because they, you know.
Have to be, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't think they'd want to throw an incomplete pass mm-hmm. there. So they ran the ball and then punted with like a minute and, 15 or something like
Mayo
that.
Mayo was big on that stop that there again. He wasn't a big play against stopping Jones.
Right. So, but had the yardage been different, I think, you know, we were ready to go for it on fourth down.
Right.
And then we got sacked on, I think it was second down, and it became third and 17. And so, when it was fourth and 17. Even though it wasn't a good chance on 4th and 17, and you hate to give the ball back in that situation, we felt like we had a better chance of getting the ball back than of making 4th and 17.
Right. On your mindset on 4th and 3, from the 23-yard line, and Matt Castle got sacked, you're down by
24-6. Yeah, and, you know, we thought about the field goal there. Had it been longer, you know, 4th and 8, 4th and 10, we would have kicked it. I felt like 4th and 3, you know, we'd been moving the ball pretty well all night, and we really had a chance on that play, too. It just, you know, we got a little bit of pressure, couldn't quite, you know, get the ball to the, we had really two receivers open, and so, you know, we just weren't able to hit it. But felt like we had a good play there, and, you know, we're down by 18 points, and
get a little momentum going.
Well, just, you know, try to get into the game with a touchdown. I mean, it would take a lot of field goals at that point. But
yeah, we get a lot of questions about that one today. But, again, and you say this so many times, when you have a good play and you feel confident about that play and the way that they're lining up there, that plays big into and weighs heavily into your decision.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's really more the critical thing than the time and sometimes even the yardage, whether it's 2, 3, or 4. It's like the two-point play. You know, really, probably the better play in that situation would have been to kick the extra point. And it was the start of the fourth quarter, so whether you're down by 3 or down by 4, I mean, it's not, you know, you got a whole quarter to play. But the main reason why we went for 2 was because we felt good about the play. You know, we felt good about what they were doing, and that we felt like we would have a real good play in that situation. So, you know, and Ben was pretty open there in the end zone. So
I know you've never liked that overtime system. We've talked about that before the show. It's probably not the best day to talk about it because people are going to think, it's sour grapes. They're talking about the
what you always say,
the overtime thing. But I guess you could say that at any given time. We were talking earlier about the possibility, and Fred actually brought it up. It was a smart, I thought, a pretty interesting idea by Fred, which is unusual, as you know, on the show. Is that what it is?
And
the more we talked about it, it made sense, because if you take an extra period and play an extra period, even if you shorten that period to 10 minutes
or 12 minutes,
what you do is that you continue playing the exact same games that you just played for 60 minutes versus having sudden death where the other team may not get the ball, or what they do in college, the stupid, you know, one possession, then you get a possession and another possession. Would you rather see the same game being played in that overtime period? Big deal. If you go to an overtime period and it's a tie at the end of the overtime period, what's wrong with the tie? Wouldn't that be part of your strategy sometimes late in that game? We can go for the tie here defensively and stop them from scoring. We'll take the tie versus the loss.
Yeah, that's always been my feeling, Glenn. I've always maintained that that a great part of football is the strategy at the end of the game. Timeouts and inbounds and out-of-bounds and incomplete passes and clock running and all that kind of thing. I think that part of the strategy is you know, it's very unique to football, although you see a lot of that in basketball, too. And the way the basketball overtime is set up, it's a, you know, whatever it is, four or five minutes. Okay, and so you play to that 5 minutes, and if you foul at the end of it, you got to make your foul shots, or, you know, just the same way that you would have to, you know, play the end of a regulation game. And you know, I think that's a very exciting part of the game rather than, you know, you said to me, the college system, I think that's the worst.
Oh, I agree.
You know, put the ball on a 20-yard line, and, you know, I would
no
much
strategy,
prefer.
No strategy,
nothing. Yeah, there's no strategy.
It's a different game. It shouldn't play.
Right, it's a different set of rules. Yeah. It's a different set of rules. And I like the basketball situation where, you know, it's not the first team to score. It's you play X amount of time, whatever that time is. And so the league's position, you know, the competition committee and all that, when they talk about it, they say, well, if you did it that way, the game might last too long, and they want to have a certain time frame on the game. Well, the overtimes average X amount of time, so whatever that time is,
that's the time you use.
Then that's the time we
use.
The
Jets went on a 7-minute drive, did they, last night?
Let's take whatever the average is. And right, if you can't get the ball back in that 10 minutes, then, you know, okay, but that's just like at the end of the game. If somebody has a 10, you know, like we did against Buffalo last week, if one team's able to hold on to the ball for that long, then, you know, great. But there's still a strategy at the end of the game of taking your timeouts, getting the ball back, having a 2-minute drive, and all that. And the way the rules are set up now, that really is eliminated.
Well, the way you get the sudden death right now, it's whoever can get into field goal position first. That's all it is.
Right.
And you're not even going to waste the downs or whatever. Once you get into good field goal position, you're going to take the 3 and end the ball game.
Right. And with the accuracy of the field goal kickers, and of course those numbers, as we all know, are going up. So, you know, have gone up pretty dramatically in the last 3 or 4 years, that's become a much higher percentage play than what it was. You know, let's just say going back to when the overtime rules were first initiated, that the field goal percentages are probably, I bet, 10% higher than they were.
Should
then
we shrink the goalposts? I mean, it's so easy.
Fred
wanted
to do
it easy now because they moved it back 10 yards. Why not shrink it 10 feet?
Well, I think, you know, I think really that at some point, the NFL, I don't know about college, at some point I think the NFL really should give some consideration to the extra point. I mean, you know, when it's 99%, what are we really talking about there?
Kick it from the 20 or something.
Right, do something. And, you know, you go back to a player like, you know, a great player like Dan Dierdorf, whose career ended on an extra point, really, when, you know, everybody fell on him and he blew out his knee. And, you know, he's, I mean, that was basically the end of his career. So, you know, what are we getting out of a play that's over 99%?
That's right.
You know, successful. I mean, that's...
What would you recommend, the two-point conversion?
Well, I'm just saying, you know, as Fred said, narrow the goalpost, move the ball back to the 20, you know, I don't know, make the extra point something more.
Maybe a little test.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there was a time when they said it was automatic, but it really wasn't. You know, it was maybe, I don't know, 92% or something. I mean, it's still... I mean, now we're talking about over 99%. So,
well, it's where the defense can line up and everything else now. It's so sterile, you know.
No, but you have in the center and arena football, it's tiny. You know, make it a challenge.
Why don't they move it, Fred? Have it move back and
make
forth.
Make it a moving target.
Yeah, there you go.
But, yeah, but that really, the width of the goalpost really ties into the whole, you know, field goal thing. I know two, 3 years ago, you know, field goal attempts over 50 yards were really at 50%. You know, over 50 yards, it's 50-50. You know, now it's over 60%.
Especially indoors, I would think it's even, better.
And just the quality of the kickers.
Yeah. It used to be coaches wouldn't even consider a 52 or 53-yard kick. It was just...
Well, it's 50-50. Yeah. You know, so if you don't make it, you know, you're giving them the ball, you know, past the 40-yard line. So I'm just saying, as those percentages and the accuracy of the kickers improves, just as they move the goalpost back 10 yards into the back of the end zone... you know, I think at some point, you know, you want to give that some consideration because the field goal numbers are going up. And as I said, the extra point now is it really is automatic. I mean,
you know what? Almost cross it like this. An extra point, you got to make it right through the diamond below and a field goal up top.
Oh, you're beautiful. time right now for the CleanEnergyAction.net Coach's Question of the Week. This one comes from Brian Reardon of Dedham. And Brian asks, hey, Coach, in your entire coaching career, which offensive player presented the biggest challenge to defend?
Which offensive player?
Randy Moss?
Yeah, well, Moss presented a lot of problems. I'd say, you know, Barry Sanders presented a lot of problems because it didn't matter what play he got the ball on. It seemed like you were defending from sideline to sideline. You know, they could run left, he'd go right, right, left, middle, outside, outside, back, inside. He was so quick and so hard to contain that he was a guy that, you know, with a receiver you can double cover him. With back like Barry Sanders, you can't double cover him. I mean, all 11 guys have to, you know, play those plays properly or, you know, he's gone.
How many times do you see Barry Sanders with what looked to be a 6 or 8 yard loss?
Yeah.
And he ends up with a 22-yard gain.
Yeah.
So I'd say he would be the, I'd say he'd probably be the toughest player that, in my coaching career that I've had to defend against. And again, with all due respect to the receivers, usually if you put two guys on them, you know, you can basically take them out of, you know, most of their patterns. But, You can't double cover back.
Look at how many Hall of Fame quarterbacks you went against. Montana, you went against Kelly in the Super Bowl and, you know, shut them down.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those players are hard to defend, but without receivers to throw to, you know, without Jerry Rice and without, Russ Francis and some of the guys they had out there in San Francisco, you know, those quarterbacks are, I don't want to say as good as the receivers, but if they have a great receiving core, those guys are as much of a problem as the quarterback.
And Sanders would go from 0 to 60 as fast as any back I've ever seen.
And he's little. You can hardly see him.
He's tiny.
Oh, but yeah, he was strong, though. Yeah,
I went right over the top of him. Yeah,
but it wasn't like he couldn't.
And a lot of times it seemed like no blocking either.
Yeah, exactly.
Mean, some of the lines he played behind weren't exactly, you know, Hall of Fame laden. Yeah. And he ran against everybody.
Yeah.
All right, every Patriots Monday this year when we talk to the coach, we'll give you your chance to submit your question for us to ask the coach at WEEI.com's football contest page. If your question is chosen, you'll automatically win a $100 gift card to the all-new Davios right here at Patriot Place. Coach's question is powered all season long by TheClean.org. When you log on to TheClean.org, you'll find that a strong wind can do a lot more than push that winning field goal through the uprights. Tackle your energy cost and alternatives at TheClean.org today. Next week, we'll get back on our regular schedule, and on Monday, Coach will join us, and Bill will preview for us the Miami Dolphins. We'll break them down. Another one of those divisional foes. So we'll talk to you on Monday back down here, Coach.
Okay. Sounds good, Glenn. Pete, Steve, thank you.
Okay. Bye.